Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the January 6th edition, or as I'd like to think of it, Dom, America Under Siege, TGIF Friday.
Happy Friday, Crudy Evan on the board, and I guess in the likeness of Donald Trump's, you know, Truthy Socials, happy January 6th to all you losers and suckers out there, all you Trump supporters, all you insurrectionist bastards, and I'm sure there's some very fine people amongst you. You fake patriots with your false bravado. Happy January 6th. I can't wait for more than 900 of you to be prosecuted.
And a big Friday show for you, the listener. Dom, let me set the stage just a bit before you rant further. Everett Mitchell, earlier this week, joined us on Monday, I believe, and a Daniel Bice column leveling accusations against him dropped on Tuesday. And I told you we would bring him back because he wanted to discuss that. We were just unaware the column was dropping. So he's coming back in about 15 minutes, Tom. Stick around. Everett Mitchell joins us at 4:22 today. In later, Dom, 2 years ago, when the January 6th insurrection happened, really hit in what, about the 5 o'clock hour central time? That's really when it got bad. I think at least that's when we started making the entirety of our show about it. By hour three?
I think by hour two. I think about an hour in, Maggie came on the show. So 1 hour in, so it'd been three. So about 4 o'clock central time is when it was. We were talking about it nonstop. It was all over the place.
Well, we're going to bring her back 2 years later to the day. Maggie Dawn, our good friend, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, expecting her in the 5 o'clock happy hour when she returns from the vet. It's got a new puppy in the family, and apparently it seems like the puppy's had a little trouble, Dom, so she's at the vet.
Oh, poor puppy.
Poor puppy. January 6th, Dom, this anniversary of the insurrection. Now, I watched the Democrats do a very somber ceremony outside the Congress today.
Yeah.
On the steps. And Nancy Pelosi, she led a lot of the ceremony. Hakeem Jeffries also played a part. But it was all Democrats. I mean, I saw our boy Mark Pocan. I saw the family members of now deceased former Capitol Police officers. I think Brian Evans, the final police officer named, the kids are tiny, man. They're little shavers. They walked up to a microphone above their heads and called out their father's name. I believe that was the last name of the fallen. And if I understood, Dom, only, what, one Republican in attendance? Because they don't have the votes for Kevin McCarthy. They don't have a speaker. Here we are on January 6th, 2 years later, and the entire country is being held hostage by insurrectionist Republican House members.
Again.
And there's some overlap in the actual membership that are failing to allow, you know, I mean, you already voted for your caucus chair. You picked Kevin McCarthy already. So all the rest of this theatrical show business they're doing in the House, Dom, they're just proving they really don't give a damn about democracy. I mean, they're ready to run roughshod over democracy, be it the Electoral College. We learned this about our U.S. Senator from the state of Wisconsin this week. Senator Ron Johnson basically told Republican legislators, according to the January 6th transcripts, take the reins. Who gives a damn what the will of the people was? Who cares what the voters voted for? There may be a means. Go take it. That was Ron Johnson's assessment here in the state of Wisconsin.
Ron Johnson and many other Republicans and MAGAs as well. And they conspired, then he put forth a plan, and they executed that multi-pronged plan to try to overturn the will of the people, period, full stop. And this insurrection, this coup, I mean, 2 years ago, can you blame the Republicans for not wanting to address it? Hell, they're dealing with some of the very same members who support that action. According to Business Insider, Crudy, the 10 a.m. ceremony to commemorate January 6th today, it apparently seemed to overlap with the scheduled 10:15 a.m. conference call for Republicans to discuss the latest round of negotiations and Republican leader Kevin McCarthy's quest to become Speaker of the House. They were just busy washing their hair.
Well, Derek Van Orden, newly elected congressman from Wisconsin's 3rd District, that's western Wisconsin, you can hear us there in Richland Center, and up in central Wisconsin as well, sort of thumbs out to the middle of the state. Shout out 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio. But Derek Van Orden was literally an insurrectionist on January 6th, 2 years ago. And now he was amongst those in the Republican caucus, although not yet sworn in as congressman, because they don't know what the hell they're doing, Dom. But Van Orden's in the caucus that's voting for Kevin McCarthy. Actually, although there's 20 of them that are holding the nation and the Congress hostage, it gets very crazy. Let's just...
Well, less than 20 now. We'll get to that later. But Van Orden is quoted today, Crudy, in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Apparently, he has some regrets, Lawrence Andrea reporting. Lawrence, we're going to figure out how to say your last name one of these days. Here's what Van Orden said. I don't regret supporting voter integrity, the Republican retired Navy SEAL said in an interview just outside the House chamber. But if you look in hindsight, like the volume of stuff, the way that it could be interpreted that I would support political violence, that is regretful. If that made people think that I support political violence, that is a regret because I don't support political violence.
Wait, let me slow you down, Dom. Now, he did serve his nation in a theater of war. But as a civilian, Derek Van Orden, not only was he an insurrectionist, Dom, he's a guy that took a sidearm loaded round in the chamber into his carry-on luggage on his return trip, I believe from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, back to La Crosse. One questions how the gun got with him in Cedar Rapids, not a new
ways.
Acquisition.
He got it when he was there, or he took it with him on the plane the first
time. Well, that might be the logical explanation, Dom, but this guy also went and made a ruckus at the local library that might be a little too gay-friendly. Went after teenagers, Dom. This guy doesn't need politics to involve violence in his life. Just any old thing could set him off. I get the feeling. The Republican, talking about Van Orden, the insurrectionist, poised to be sworn in to represent Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district. The people in western Wisconsin must be so proud. Has faced criticism over the last 2 years for being near the Capitol, as thousands of Trump supporters forced their way into the building in an attempt to stop the certification of Joe Biden's presidential election victory. Then, oh yeah, someone to hang Mike Pence. And of course, you know, if Nancy Pelosi had been around, I suspect they'd have done the same or worse to her. His, Van Orden's, latest comments provide new insight into his views on the issue that shadowed his campaign and followed him into his first term in Congress. Van Orden has maintained that he never entered the Capitol on January 6th.
Never!
And left the area before the violence began. He said he walked away from the Capitol during the insurrection and noted that he tweeted that he condemned all forms of political violence as the rioters were in the building. He later wrote an op-ed in the La Crosse Tribune saying he was in D.C. for meetings and to stand for the integrity of our electoral system.
Hey, I wonder, Van Orden, you just won this last election, right? How do you feel about the integrity of our electoral system in your victory, sir?
A photograph of Van Orden on the wall near the Capitol and wearing earbud headphones later circulated with a report from the Daily Beast contending Van Orden entered an area characterized as being beyond police barricades. Van Orden told the Journal Sentinel this week the wall that he was on was 450 meters away from the Capitol. He noted he was wearing Beats by Dre earbuds, joking that Democrats who suggested the earbuds could have been used to communicate with writers don't like hip-hop. Oh, he's so clever, this guy. When asked if he meant he was listening to music at the time, Van Orden responded, "Here's my point. They came up with the..."
So, wait, hang on. Yes or no, dude? That's a great question, and you can joke about it, but what were you doing with the earbuds in? You were listening to Dr. Dre, man, a little Chronic, to calm you down at the insurrection?
Do you think he was perhaps using them to communicate with some other people, Dom? Like, through a cell phone, perhaps?
Perhaps.
A little bit more. When asked if he was listening to music at the time, Van Orden responded, "Here's my point. They came up with the kookiest conspiracy theories in the world. I'm a Navy SEAL for over 21 years. I have 5 combat tours. At no time did I ever wear Beats from Dr. Dre to lead any operation."
So that was, yes, I was listening to music, or no, I was not listening to music. And we talk about kooky conspiracy theories, sir. What about the things you're believing in? I mean, what are you talking about, election integrity?
Dominic, Van Orden said he was only standing there near the wall and claimed he normally walks around with earbuds in. Do you walk around with earbuds in? No, I don't like the earbuds.
Yeah, I use them quite often.
So that could be plausible, you walk around with earbuds?
Sure.
You're the same kind of a loser that Derek Van Orden, the insurrectionist, is. Now to be poised to become a sworn member of Congress, Van Orden appears to be attempting to shift his image. He wants to shift it a little bit. He said he would work with anybody as long as they meet certain conditions. "Everything you're kind of coming to me with is legally, morally, and ethically correct. Unlike my prior conduct, don't look back 2 years." A little bit more from Van Orden. "You're putting the interests of the district, the state, and the country above your own personal, political, and financial interest. If you meet those 4 conditions, we can talk." Tough talk from that accused insurrectionist. No, just insurrectionist adjacent, Dom. He's wearing the Dre's. Walking around.
Digging the hip-hop and concerned about election integrity.
Come back with us. The January 6th edition of the Devil's Advocate's got a fine guest, Judge Everett Mitchell. He will respond to an earlier Daniel Bice column. Stick around for him next.
Oh, we're gonna go get a weapon, everybody.
We don't want people that are mentally ill.
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Check us out on the socials, on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at The Devil's Advocates Radio, and all the podcasts you can find at civicmedia.us.
Now, Dominic, I thought I had confirmed the guest. Apparently I had not. We'll see if we can pin him down. Everett Mitchell, if you're listening, the phone lines, they're open at 844-967-2789. January 6th, I wanted to get back to the insurrectionist, soon-to-be sworn-in new congressman from western Wisconsin from the 3rd, although some called him a carpetbagger. It didn't seem to hold him back. He got elected. The bipartisan sentiments that Van Orden, you know, I'm sure
he has 4 requirements for him to sit down and, you know, work with anybody. Let's see. What were they again? It's got to be lawful, right? He'll work with anybody. So as long as it's legally, morally, and ethically correct. Everything you're coming to me is legally, morally, and ethically correct. You're putting the interests of the district, the state, and country above your own personal, political, and financial interests. You know, then how does it, if that's your minimum to do a deal, then how do you vote for a guy like Trump? I mean, literally. I mean, do you think Donald Trump put his personal, political, and financial interests behind the country, the district, and the state? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, so why all of a sudden this change of heart? If that's your requirement, then you will never do a deal with people like Donald Trump, Derek Van Orden.
Well, Dom, he rides a Harley Davidson. I mean,
so does Scott Walker.
A little bit, sort of, sort of, right? He, Van Orden, arrived at the Capitol for the first day of the new Congress on a Harley Davidson, which he called his Milwaukee Iron, and spoke of bipartisanship, as mentioned earlier, calling working across party lines absolutely imperative, Dom. Van Orden, absolutely imperative. But I want to get down to what my rep, Mark Pocan, had to say about the man. Again, his bipartisan sentiment, a little skepticism. I believe that's for show. In order to get reelected in a marginal district, Mark Pocan told the Journal Sentinel, I just don't think you can be both an insurrectionist and a member of Congress, Pocan added. You can't wait to tear down democracy while trying to govern it. But we'll see. We'll see indeed. Van Orden defeated State Senator Brad Papp by 4 points in November to flip Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district from blue to red. Ron Kind, an outspoken critic of Van Orden, previously held the state's main swing district since 1997. Gonna miss Ron. More here. Standing outside the House chamber. This is towards the end of the article, Dom. Standing outside the House chamber, Van Orden dismissed a question about whether his connection to the January 6th would impact his calls for bipartisanship. He reiterated his conditions for agreeing to work with another member. Those are my only conditions. If someone else can't get past that, that's on them. I'm going to do me. And my job is to come to Washington, D.C. to represent the 750,000 people in the 3rd Congressional District to the best of my ability. It's kind of a low bar if it's to the best of your ability. 844-967-2789.
Any more meat on that bone, Crudy? Because I want to just kind of remind some people here from People.com, People Magazine. This was published August 24th of 2001. Go ahead, Crudy.
Well, I was just going to point out, Van Orden told the Journal Sentinel he owns no stocks. He and his wife live off his military retirement benefits. He did not provide details on the budget and term limit legislation, a couple of his big advocacies, Dom, noting those measures were still being worked on, but said protecting American citizens meant funding law enforcement agencies and the military.
Of course. From People Magazine, August of 2021.
I'm going to do me, Dom.
Do me. Well, here's him doing him before he was congressman-elect. A Republican candidate from Wisconsin allegedly confronted a teenage library worker over a book display marking Pride Month in June, creating a very uncomfortable, threatening situation. They said that Van Orden demanded that the display book celebrating Gay Pride Month be taken down. Quote, his voice was loud. He was aggressive. He had his finger jabbing into the book constantly. Kerrigan Trouch told the La Crosse Tribune about the June incident. She was 17 at the time. The library director at Nancy Ashmore told People that Van Orden came to the library 3 times that day. The first time he complained about the Pride book display. The second time he got a library card and checked out most of the books. And the third time he returned the books. He's one of several people who complained, but because he's a politician, he got the most attention, Ashmore said. He was upset when he came in the first time. When he came back later in the day, he was much more reasonable and calm. Of course, he ran for Congress. He got it. Trump. He's endorsed by Trump. Ashmore said Van Orden objected to the book display, which featured children's books. Being in the children's area of the library also told her the books were not factual. He specified one book, A Day in the Life of Marlon Brando, as being not true. That book, by a staffer from HBO News show Last Week Tonight, is a parody of a children's book by former Vice President Mike Pence and revolves around a rabbit marrying another rabbit of the same sex. He's quite right. It's not factual, Ashmore said of Van Orden's objections, but it's not supposed to be. It's fiction. So this guy, he's really looking forward to working across the aisle. I can't wait for another 2 years to boot this guy out of Congress.
You can't spell bipartisan without insurrectionist, Tom? 844-967-2789. Tom, be patient. We'll get to you first today. Now's about the time when we turn to the grievances, Tom. the Friday grievances. If we're not going to have a guest, we're going to have more time for you. But Maggie Dawn assures us she's going to be with us in the happier, happy hour, Dom. The two-year anniversary of the January 6th attack on democracy, on America. Hang Mike Pence. And, of course, put away those fictional novels about that rabbit.
Hey, this is a celebration. The Republic held firm that day. Democracy is still here. The wheels of justice are turning slowly, but they are turning. So this is, should be a day of celebration. At the end of it, we're still here, and they're not.
And Van Norden has the freedom to object to them gay bunnies.
Big and tall of political talk, the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. Nearly the weekend, Dom. And I see we have an eagerly anticipated guest. We won't take the whole segment. So if you're holding in the queue, and I mean you, Tom, start with you. You guys hang on. But let's make a little bit of time for Judge Everett Mitchell. Just a recent guest on the show Monday, but a new column out on Tuesday, and we want to give him one more crack. Everett, thanks for coming back. Sorry we missed each other at 10 minutes ago, but glad you made time for us, sir. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Judge.
It's great to be back. Great to be back on the Devil's Advocate. Thank you all so much for having me again.
Well, Judge Mitchell, you apparently were aware that Daniel Bice was writing an article, and after we completed our interview earlier this week, you said, man, I wish we'd have talked about it. And I said, I didn't even know about it, Everett. So there were some accusations leveled in this article by Daniel Bice in the Journal Sentinel regarding your first marriage. And it apparently happened in a custody circumstance. And as is pointed out in the reporting, you deny the accusations. The accusation is of a sexual nature within the context of the marriage, but the judge did not uphold this circumstance. There was no criminal charges leveled. And I want you to tell the story and you to tell people where you stand. What is the truth and the veracity of this story?
So I did not do anything to hurt or would have ever done anything to hurt my ex-wife nor my daughter. What the story, and I told the reporter this, is that my sister-in-law, Morgan Geist, was killed by a drunk driver. After she was killed by a drunk driver in 2007, she was a senior going into Purdue. She was beautiful. She was a part of our family. We loved her so much. And then when the drunk driver killed her, my ex-wife's mental health declined rapidly. And so, you know, being the father that I was, I did everything I could to make sure that I had my daughter in my custody. And that's what I did. I fought for her to make sure that I had her until my ex-wife's mental health was able to come back. Not only did I lose a sister-in-law, I also lost my wife at that time. And so, but my job was to focus on my daughter. And when we were, you know, as I was going through law school, so I raised my daughter through law school, single dad, doing hair, taking her to daycare. And then after, I graduated from law school, she was getting ready to leave the state, and I declined to do that. And she had gotten permission from
the judge. Let me interrupt, Everett. When you say she was going to leave the state, you're talking about your ex-wife wanted to leave the state, and there was a question about whether or not your daughter could go with, effectively. Is that my understanding, sir?
Yes. Yes, sir. And so, in Wisconsin, you presume to have your child. So I said, no, I don't. I want to keep my daughter here with me in Wisconsin. And so she was getting ready to leave the state. I said no. And she was supposed to take her for a weekend, and she didn't bring her back. And so when she did not bring her back and would not bring her back to Wisconsin, I had to go to get help from the police. I had to call the court system at that time to say, I need help getting my daughter back here. She was starting kindergarten at Kennedy Elementary School, and she had only had a week of classes. And so we were trying to get her back. So my current wife and I now, we went back and forth to Ohio. She was hiding her in Ohio. And then eventually we got an order to give me sole custody and permanent placement. So that we took that order to the Cincinnati police, and the Cincinnati police went to our home, and then the Cincinnati police made her give me our daughter. And then I took my daughter and brought her back to Wisconsin so she could start kindergarten. And it was doing all of this other custody that she was just throwing everything. But the police, the guardian ad litem, as well as the judge, all recognized that none of that stuff was true and gave me primary placement of my daughter. And she had to have supervised visits with my daughter until I felt comfortable that she wasn't going to do that again by taking her out of the state.
Everett, was this part of the public record? How did this story come to light? I realize you're a Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate, and if it's in the public record, I guess that's how it comes to light. But this seems like family custody kind of stuff. If there were never any criminal charges leveled against you, sir, if this didn't even, I mean, it seems like, if I understand the reporting, that the custody dispute, effectively, you prevailed despite the allegation leveled against you, then how did this end up in a Daniel Bice column?
Well, I continue to contend that the only person who benefits from this is my liberal opponent. To drop the story right when we were supposed to file our nomination papers and all the whispers that have been spread out. So that's where I am confident that it was leaked to him. And then as a result of that, they gave him where to look for this particular family court dispute. And I agree with you. You know, the biggest thing that I've told people in response to this is that my daughter she didn't know any of this stuff, because my job was to protect her from all of this stuff that was happening around her. She's now a sophomore in college at the age of 17 years old. She started college early, and she just sent me her grade. She has a 3.7 as a sophomore in college. So she is strong. She's healthy. She's confident. She's beautiful. And I did exactly what many in our society say black men don't do. It's to stand up, take care of my child, ask for no excuses, fought for to be in her life so that I could give her something that I never had. I never had a father in my life, but I wanted her to always know that she was the ultimate priority for me. And my ex-wife now has gotten herself together, and now we're able to co-parent my daughter. You know, I am a father figure to her children that she has, and so all of our children are able to work and be in community together. So like the article said, we moved on, and we had moved on, and we've been effectively co-parenting together because, you know, she has been able to come back to herself over time.
And
this,
in fact,
this just brought out.
Well, I was just going to say, your ex points and says, you know, you want to judge Everett Mitchell, judge him by his judicial record. I think that is a commendable thing. But I want to end this thought, at least from my perspective, Everett, with the specific allegation and allow you to respond to it. The reporting, and I'm reading directly from the Daniel Bice piece here at the Journal Sentinel, the reporting says that you, Mitchell, had sexually assaulted your ex-wife 2 weeks earlier when you removed her clothes and had sex with her after she had taken a sleeping pill. This is your ex-wife within the confines of the marriage. Did that happen or did that not happen, Everett? Everett? We're not hearing your response, Everett. Hold for Everett Mitchell's response. Hopefully that's a technical issue.
And we seem to have lost him. We'll get him back.
Okay. Yeah, there he is. He's calling in. So I'm sorry. I'll ask the question one more time. Let's see if that's Everett Mitchell. Everett, can you hear me?
Is he?
Everett,
I can hear you, man. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
That's why I like being in studio.
Well, we're sorry we don't have you here today. But the question, the direct question, Everett, there's an allegation that, you know, you had sex with your ex-wife while she was under the influence of a sleeping pill. This is the allegation that was leveled. Did that happen or not, sir?
It did not happen. It did not happen at all. And I think she said a lot of things during that time, but that did not happen. And it would never happen, never hurt my wife. And none of these things ever matriculated until after my sister-in-law was killed and her mental health was compromised at that time.
Everett, what did I fail to ask you? What other information in regards to this article would you want the public to know before they made a decision about whether or not to vote for you in February, sir?
I would say that, you know, it is very sad in our state of politics that people will use the mental health and pain of loss to try to score political points. This election should be about the future of our state, and it is very important that listeners understand that this kind of politics is what destroys our ability to have great people who don't have a perfect past, but who are working through so many different complex things to serve with dignity, with passion, with promise, and to understand that as a result of that, you know, it allows for me to bring a level of empathy and concern for those who have mental health challenges to the role that I play as a judge and will play as a justice, because I know the impact that all of these things can have on everyday people's lives. So I want the voters to know that that is something that I bring, and that I'm not the only one who's been through these things, but I do believe that we are to judge individuals based on who they are and what they bring into conversation about what they're trying to do for the future of our state. And this is one of the things that I think voters need to know and must know so that they don't get sidetracked and get lost in people trying to make political points off of hurting people's experiences.
Folks are listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Judge Everett Mitchell, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate, coming around again. Judge, thanks for coming. You know, a friend of mine once said, we are a flawed species, humanity. And I guess my question to you, Everett, is given these circumstances, you know, relationships can get nasty, breakups can be bad, divorces happen. I mean, there's a lot of emotions that go through, and of course, tragedy strikes, and it compounds everything. What would you tell people? What would you tell folks that are experiencing those kinds of traumas and difficulties right now? Any lessons learned? Any wisdom to pass along?
Well, I think for me it was about the importance of self-care and empathy. I think, you know, a part of the article talked about, you know, my own abuse that I had encountered, the own sexual abuse that I had endured, and for 12 years from the age of 6 to the age of 18 years old, and always fighting to get help. That mental health is still essential, that we need to make sure that we're sensitive to it, and that people should prioritize and feel okay with prioritizing their mental health and saying it's okay. You know, as a man, especially as a black man, that's not something that we talk about in our community. So I was grateful to have mentors who told me that it's okay to see a therapist. It's okay to ask for help when you need it. And that's what I always advocate for. You know, it's okay to ask for help when you need it, and trust that there are going to be great people, wonderful people, safe people who can hold your vulnerability in that space so that you can continue to heal and be the productive person that you are. I have this thing that someone told me. He said, sometimes you have to heal while you move. That maybe life doesn't stop for you, but that you can continue to heal and prioritize your healing as you move through life. And that will continue to give you even more confidence that you can make it through every difficult spot you may find yourself in.
Judge Everett Mitchell, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate. Judge, I'm glad you came back and we had an opportunity to clear the air on the Daniel Bice article.
I appreciate it so much, man. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, have a great weekend, Judge Mitchell. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates, and those who are patient are in the top of the queue, and I mean you, Tom, from Madison. Thanks, appreciate your patience. What do you got for us, Tom?
Hey, Tom, what's happening?
Hey, guys, it's really nice to be with you on January 6th, and I was just looking at some of the social media going on with our own Republicans in Wisconsin, and while the rest of the world is, or at least the rest of the country is remembering January 6th, Tom Tiffany is posting about a sheriff retirement and crude oil prices, and Fitzgerald is posting about every job, energy jobs, and how to run Congress. And they don't seem to be doing a really good job of running Congress right now.
I would say fair to middling at best.
But my favorite is Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson went and he's posting a whole thing about the coup we never knew. We're talking about those radical Democrats and the U.S. border and all the debt we're doing and the dangers of clean energy and all of these different things. It's a wild column in the Blade of Perseus. So,
Tom, exactly you lost me somewhere in Rojo's writings. But what's Ron going to talk about? The patriotic visitors that came to see him at the Capitol 2 years ago on January 6th?
They stayed within the velvet ropes. They're peaceful. It was a good time. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We're always a good time. Join us, 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Happy Friday to us all. Your grievances at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank our most recent guest, Everett Mitchell. Judge Everett Mitchell, want to thank him for coming back. He is a Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate. And as we pointed out, a accusation leveled in the family courts, which I perceive generally to be closed procedures, against Everett by his ex-wife, that did not lead to any criminal charges, which did not apparently sway the presiding judge, easy for me to say, did not persuade the presiding judge, because Mitchell was awarded full custody of the child at that time, at that circumstance, as he mentioned, his wife, ex-wife, according to his accounts, was going through some mental health stuff. So that's a pretty personal thing to have to defend oneself against in public,
yeah,
in a Daniel Bice column. And I did ask Everett, well, how do you think it got in the Daniel Bice column? Because I don't think that's not like, you know, getting a DWI on Friday night and it turning up in the Sunday paper because you're running for something. That's a closed family court sort of proceeding. So how did that make its way into a Daniel Bice column? And his thought was, well, that must have come from my liberal political opponent. And that, sadly, Dom, is exactly what I thought.
Okay, politics, but why the liberal opponent? Why wouldn't it be whoever got their hands on it, whoever got it? It could be the conservative opponents just as likely. I mean, if you got dirt, you're going to use it, you're going to save it. I mean, I don't know.
You absolutely save it. First, you save if you're a conservative,
you get through the primary, and then you drop it down?
Yeah, yes. If you are a conservative in the race, if this came from, let's say, Dan Kelly's team, you don't go kill Everett Mitchell if you perceive perhaps Protasiewicz is a stronger candidate. You wait and see what happens. And if Mitchell catches a flyer, because I would say Protasiewicz probably has a little more of the, let's just call it the political machine, the nation machine behind her currently. And she's got Justice Dallet behind her, and I respect Justice Dallet quite a bit. She was introducing Janet Protasiewicz, this nice judge lady. I don't know her well. Look forward to her coming on. But she was being introduced around. And my perception at the DPW, well, here's the party's choice. That was my perception. That Protasiewicz, you know, kind of had the political...
The establishment's behind her more.
The
so
establishment,
than
Mitchell, the insiders,
yeah,
were behind her. And I would question with the failure of Mandela Barnes to defeat Ron Johnson... And the fact that he was crucified effectively for being a black man, you know, Kenosha and the bail issues, you know, he was crucified by the Waukesha parade stuff. There are some insiders that are doing the strategic math that are, and I'm not talking about Ben Wickler per se. I'm talking about those that fund the exercises of the Democratic Party, the donor class. Well, if you think they failed, as is being stated by Ben Wickler in Time Magazine, to fully fund Mandela Barnes when he could have had the most impact, when he just won the primary, when the attacks were being leveled against Mandela. Well, do you think from the insider's point of view, from the strategic Democratic point of view, Do you think some people are saying, oh, man, not another black candidate, not this cycle, not after Mandela just lost by 27,000 votes statewide? I'm not saying it's a fair strategic statement, but it's been stated to me in not so many words. Ah, it's unfortunate the timing after Mandela just lost that Everett Mitchell also happens to be a black candidate. It's been said to me in not so many words.
I mean,
words.
No, I believe you. If it's been said to you, I'm not doubting what you say, Michael. I would just, you know, when I think about this, you know, I think if you look at the numbers, a lot of people think, and I think Ben Wickler said as well, that in many ways, Mandela Barnes overperformed. And if it were not for the lack of funding at the Strategic Times, that perhaps he would have actually won that. Okay, fair enough. But that seems like coming pretty close. So, at the end of the day, people want good candidates. But, you know, politics are ugly. But this is this relevant? You know, once it comes to light, whether it was slipped under the desk or someone did some sleuthing and got found a copy of something, however this came to light, is it not appropriate to vet and discuss these issues? I think in some regards, once it's public, it absolutely is. And I'm glad that Everett Mitchell came back to discuss it today.
My concern, and, you know, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the bedroom, wasn't in the right. marriage, wasn't in the courthouse. I like Everett Mitchell. The man strikes me as very earnest. In fact, I'd had a conversation with a number of people that they've told me so far he's their preferred candidate. You know, they like him. They're hearing him more. They hear him on our show. They've heard him around the Civic Media Network. They've heard him on some of our colleagues' shows. And seems like a smart guy. Seems like an earnest guy. He's got a life history of overcoming and achieving. And I find him to be a very appealing candidate. And no offense to Janet Protasiewicz, I don't know her. And she's got that difficult name. I mean, I struggle with it. You know how I am now. So, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but in politics, you know, she'd be better off if she was Judge Janet Smith. It's tough. It's tough.
You,
well,
you, not everyone has that flaw, Michael, but no.
Well, thank goodness she's qualified on the ballot. And you don't have to write her in like Lisa Murkowski.
It's politics, man. And however it came out, I think it was it's worthy of discussion. If the story was different, it seems like based on the reporting, the ex-wife is saying judge, you know, her ex-husband Everett Mitchell on his judicial record, you know, she's not seemingly holding anything and perhaps there it's some admission to some regard that she's not bringing up and reinforcing it now is that maybe she was going through some, you know, mental things back then. It can be terrible. I mean, you lose a sister to that, to a drunk driver, you know, man, that would be tough for anybody, man. I mean, the trauma that people go through is it's tough. And people react to it differently. So if that's the case, then seemingly it's good to have the discussion. If it comes to light, it needs to be discussed. I guess I don't know what to say about it. It came to light.
But it's a he said... She said circumstance within the context of a placement hearing that doesn't seem like it's a public venue that now ends up in the paper and this specter now hangs over his candidacy.
Santos didn't get any sort of investigation, man. You got once it comes out, I think you absolutely got to look at it. And if it were to be the case that there was some actual evidence of abuse, wouldn't you want to know that?
Yes, but there was only the accusation, which is denied by the other party, and the judge in the placement hearing found for the guy who's denied it ever happened.
Right.
Obviously,
and that, along with the conversation we just had with Judge, I think tells everybody what they need to know.
Fair enough. Let's leave it there for now. Friday grievances. Let's hear from you, yours. Damn it, I can't talk either. That's one of mine.
Come on.
It is Friday. Week, it's been a long week. It's been a hell of a week. It's been a good week, and get better with your phone calls. If I can say it or not, 844. 967-2789. I think I got the number right that time.
Well done, Michael.